Hi, my name's Bonnie Kibbe. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to shut this book up here. I'm a leaner. I was a crawler when I drank, and I'm a leaner sober. It's a real honor, and it's a privilege to be here tonight. Don't forget your cup. It's a privilege to participate in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Whether I'm asked to come early and help set up, or stay late and help tear down, or share my story. Sounds like I have an echo, doesn't it? You're hearing me in stereo. You know, I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to come out. 55 years, that's a big deal. You know, someone came to this group, made coffee, set it up, and had the doors open for us. I've had a wonderful time since I've been here in Alabama. I've went to some great AA meetings, and I've got to visit with Carol and Kelly and Donna and Kim, and we've just went all over. And you people here are just like back home in Ohio. You're so friendly. No matter where I go, I'm at home. When I was new in sobriety, and I would hear people say, when I came to you, I knew I was home, I would think, yeah, right, yeah. And then I would hear people say, I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I would think, yeah, right, yeah. And I never thought the day would come when I would feel like I was at home. No matter where I go, in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel like I'm at home. So thank you a lot for asking me to come out and share with you today. My sobriety date, November 15th, 1984. My home group's the Plug in the Jug. We meet in Columbus, Ohio on Wednesday nights at 7:30. If you're in Columbus, come on up to the Plug. We got homemade goodies. We'll go to any lengths to get you drunks out there. I have a sponsor, and I use my sponsor. See, I need a sponsor today as much as I did in the very beginning. Today I can start thinking I know something, and I can quote the book to you, and I can tell you how many meetings I've been secretary of. I can tell you how many ladies I sponsor. And I can let up on my spiritual program of action, which according to my big book is working with others. And I can rest on my laurels, the things I did yesterday, and I can get drunk. And I need a sponsor to tell me I don't know anything. The only thing I know for sure is how to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get up in the morning and ask God to let me read what I need to read from the big book, and I make contact with our book. I truly believe that there's power in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I read from our book, and I read the Daily Reflection, that's my meditation book, and then I go up and I say my prayers. And then I go about my day. Some days I go to work when I have to work. I work for myself so I can kind of set my own schedule. I attend meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, 7 to 10 a week. I go because I want to go. I go because I owe it to you. I owe it to Alcoholics Anonymous to be in these rooms. I don't know about anything else but Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, that's all I know. When the book says spiritual principles will solve all my problems, in the 9 years I've been sober, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous has been all that I've needed. I'm sharing with you what I do today to stay sober. I think it's important that you know that the basics that I did in the very beginning, I need to do today. All I've done since I came to you all is show up in rooms just like this, and my God has done the rest. I'd like to ask my God to help me out here tonight. Father, may it be your words I say tonight. May I say just one thing to help one person in this room. Help me to share. Amen. I had my first drink of alcohol when I was 12 years old. It was Thunderbird wine and Stroh's beer. Top shelf, right off the bat, you know. They had this commercial on the radio about Thunderbird, and it would go, what's the word? Thunderbird. Y'all are like the people in institutions. When I go in institutions and I share that with them, I have 200 inmates screaming back at me, Thunderbird. And they know the rest of the commercial. I don't know it, but after the meeting, someone will come up and tell me. I know they will. They always do. Well, my first drink was my first drunk and my first blackout. I drank that Thunderbird and that Stroh's, and I got drunk, and I blacked out. And I came to, and it was the next day, and I was in my bed, and my dad was shaking me, demanding to know where I'd been the night before and who I'd been with. I didn't know where I'd been, but I knew who I'd been with. I'd been with my boyfriend, Danny. I called Danny up on the telephone and asked him where we had been, and he told me back on the telephone that I had my first sexual experience. Now, you would have thought with things like that happening when I drank Thunderbird and Stroh's, I would have thought about it. That's some serious stuff. I was 12 years old. I gave it no thought at all. None. I grew up in the 60s, and back in the 60s, we girls would carry these purses like overnight bags, and I'd go into this carryout up by my house with my overnight bag purse, and the clerk would turn his head to wait on a customer, and a couple bottles of that Thunderbird would go into my purse. I'd walk down the alleys with my friends, and we'd drink that Thunderbird, and we'd sing songs of the 60s. We'd sing Duke of Earl and Cry Baby Cry, and everything was okay. By the time I'm 15 years old, in 3 short years, I'm having convulsions on a regular basis. I'd been suspended from public school 17 times. Later, they expelled me from all public schools. They told me I had a bad attitude. Of course, I thought it was them. I thought it was my parents, too. They had a bad attitude. My husband's had a bad attitude. The Columbus Police Department, car number 73, most definitely had a bad attitude about me. When I drank alcohol, I was a liar, a cheat, a thief, and a finger pointer. And when I got sober, the 15th of November of 1984, I was a sober liar, cheat, thief, and finger pointer. I was such a thief, I would go to this meeting on Monday night, and in the ladies' bathroom, they had one of those silk flower arrangements. I called my sponsor. I said, if it's there next Monday night, it's mine. She said, when you go in that bathroom, you keep your hands in your pockets. I want to share a little with you about what I was like when I came to y'all. I used 4-letter words and mother ran in between. My sponsor didn't say, Bonnie, honey, don't talk so much. She said, shut up. Thank God she did. See, if I would have shared with you what I was thinking in the words I knew, I would have embarrassed myself. My sponsor told me in the very beginning, Bonnie, you have a toolbox. In that toolbox is prayer, reading your big book, going to meetings, calling me, and pen and paper. She said, write stuff down and throw it away. Don't keep it. You don't need to reread it. It's depressing stuff. I told you I was a finger pointer. I'd be taking my sponsor home from a meeting, and I'd be doing y'all's inventory, pointing my finger at you. I want to share what I dressed like when I came to y'all. I wore those kind of jeans you gotta lay down to get zipped, you know. Blouses you could see through, I could see through, everybody could see through. Well, I'd go pick my sponsor up for a meeting, and I'd be doing your inventory, pointing my finger at you. And I'd say, next week, if that woman stares at me at the meeting, I'm going to punch her out. My sponsor would say, Bonnie, if you didn't dress like that, maybe people wouldn't stare at you. She was my power of example. Not for just getting sober, for cleaning up. She was my power of example for living life on life's terms. Yeah. You know, I went to pick my sponsor up one night for a meeting, and she said, Bonnie, every day's a magical adventure to see what you're going to be wearing. I thought, did she insult me? Took me a while to figure out perhaps she had. It amazes me looking back on it. By the time I'm 15 years old, I'm hanging with a bunch of bikers. They were my kind of people. They fought hard and partied hardy. They were people I wanted to be around at that time in my life. I'd go to this bar where these bikers hung out, and I'd get served mixed drinks, and I'd get drunk as a skunk. I'd go home, and I'd throw up all over the kitchen floor, reach into the linen closet, throw these towels down in this throw-up, pick up those towels and throw them down the basement stairs. The next day when I would get up, my mom would say, Bonnie, did you see that mess your brother made? I said, I've seen that. It's terrible. I intuitively knew not to accept responsibility for actions I took while drinking. No one had to tell me. It was like built in. Whatever it was, I didn't do it, and I didn't know who did do it. That's how I was. When you told me, sober up, clean up, grow up, take responsibility for your actions, it was amazing to me. It was amazing. All my life, I'd been pointing my finger at others and saying it was because of them. My dad told me he wanted me to clean my act up, wanted me to come home at a decent hour, go to school, and quit hanging with those bikers. I told my father, if you don't like the way I do things, I'll get my friends in the gang to take care of you. He didn't appreciate that. He told me to leave home. So at 15, I left home. You know, I remember thinking, look out, world, here I come. I'm going to conquer the world, especially you men. I conquered the world all the way to Oak Street and Parsons Avenue. Now in Columbus, that's the ghetto. I told my friends I moved to the art section of Columbus. As near as I can figure out today, I must have seen someone with one of those paint-by-numbers, you know. In the book, it says the alcoholic's in full flight from reality. And believe me, I was in full flight from reality. I got an apartment with four ladies down there, and I got a job at a little coffee shop in a hotel. I was a waitress. I had to be to work at 7 in the morning, and at 10 o'clock I would get my break. Well, right across the street from the hotel I worked at was Stone's Grill. So at 10 o'clock, I'm running over to Stone's Grill. I'm drinking a couple double vodkas, going back to the restaurant, finishing my shift out, getting off work at 3 o'clock, and going to Stone's and staying until they closed. I wasn't 16 years old yet, and it was real normal living to me. If you didn't drink, I did not trust you. In fact, I knew you were not trustworthy if you didn't drink. And to share the truth with you tonight, I was the one that was not trustworthy. When I came to you all, I said, I have a problem trusting people. And the truth was, I was the one that was not trustworthy. You see, when I drank, I would say to you, you can tell me anything. I won't tell a person. Swear to God, I won't tell nobody. I put it in blood. I'm Blackfoot Indian. I'd have been putting a lie in blood. I knew nothing about trust when I came to you all. Anything good that I am today is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anything bad I bring into these rooms with me. And hopefully my God's grace will continue to give me the willingness to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I lived at Parsons and Oak for 2.5 years, and I did whatever was necessary to support my alcoholism. I lived in this apartment with these four ladies. We never bought any food. I don't remember ever paying the rent, and I could have been the person paying the rent. But blackouts were acceptable to me from the very beginning. I never knew a blackout was when your body kept functioning and your mind quit recording. And had I known, it wouldn't have made a darn bit of difference. I went down every road, every detour, and every alley necessary for me to be right here with you all tonight. This apartment that I lived in that I told you was completely insane. We had no food, didn't know who was paying the rent. Had we had food, we had no utensils to cook it in. One of us would get a date, and the man would come to pick up his date, and we all four would go. We'd have him take us to nice restaurants that had dishes, china, yeah. And before the waiter at the restaurant could do his job and clear the table, I would do his job for him in my overnight bag purse. And that's where we got our dishes. One night I was talking at a meeting in Columbus about 5 years ago, and I shared that story. Only I said the name of the restaurant. Well, after the meeting, this lady came up to me, and she said, "My name is so-and-so," and it was the name of the restaurant. I said, "I owe you big time amends." She said, "After hearing your story, you make amends by staying sober." Well, anyhow, I would take these dishes from these restaurants, and we had no utensils to cook water in, so I'd get up in the morning and I'd want a cup of coffee before going to work. I'd turn on that tap water, put a spoon of instant coffee in one of these cups and put it under that tap water, and I'd have that cup of coffee with that foamy head on it, you know. Normal living to me. I lived down there for 2.5 years, and I did whatever was necessary to support my alcoholism. My brother came down to see me one day, and he said, "Bonnie, you're going to end up killing someone and going to prison, or they're going to kill you. Why don't you get together with that guy you dated in school?" And I said, "Fine, you tell him come down to see me, and maybe we'll get together." I grew up in a time when the TV shows were real family-oriented. They were shows like Donna Reed and Father Knows Best, and if y'all remember back, Donna Reed was married, had a son and a daughter, and when a crisis came up, Donna baked a cake. I knew I was going to be just like Donna. I knew I was going to meet the right man and be all right. What I didn't know, I would have untreated alcoholism. And drinking was only one of the symptoms of my disease. If it were just about not drinking, I'd have been a winner in the county jail and in the workhouse. But it's a whole lot more than not drinking. Well, this guy I dated in school, he and I decided to get married. And within 3 years, we were married, had a son, a daughter, a house in the suburbs, and a collie dog. We're the all-American family. And I'm expecting him to make me happy now. See, I thought my happiness came from bottles or people. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that my happiness is an inside job, that it comes from my God's grace of giving me the willingness to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I didn't know that then, and I'm searching for happiness from this husband of mine. When he's unhappy, I have this drive inside, almost like a demon, to make him happy so I can feel complete. In my mind, I thought he and I made one whole person. But in my mind, I was never 50%. I was always maybe 30%. I got involved in crafts. I got involved in sewing. I started teaching the young adults Bible class at my church. I got involved in the community. I was looking for material things, outside things to fix me inside, not knowing I suffered from untreated alcoholism. My husband and I were married for 9.5 years. We were out riding a motorcycle one Sunday afternoon in August. A car turned left in front of us. As a result, I came to at Riverside Hospital in Columbus, and I was paralyzed from the waist down. At Riverside, I became addicted to morphine. I was in Riverside for 42 days, and I left in a wheelchair. I had 2 bags full of medication, and I took them home and put them on a shelf above my sink. And I told my mom, bring over Grandpa's cane. And I'd reach up from my wheelchair with my grandfather's cane, and I'd tap a bottle into the sink. And it would say, take one every 4 hours. And I knew if it said, take one, I needed 3. And that's how I started taking the medication. I'd sit in my wheelchair, and I'd have a Tom Collins in this hand and a bottle of pills in this hand. And I'd listen to Nancy Sinatra sing, these boots are made for walking. And I'd think, I'm going to walk right out of this marriage. I blamed my husband for the terrible accident we were involved in. One day, my son and daughter are in their bedroom fighting, and my daughter, Mary Melissa, she started kicking the wall. I got up, ran in to smack them. They screamed, Mama, you're walking. And that's how I started walking. My husband and I decided to separate, and we filed for divorce. At this time in the mid-70s in Columbus, there's a lot of discos opening up. This is my Disco Bonnie stage. I dressed the part to go to the discos, bought all the gold-plated change, you know, and go to the discos on the weekends. Pretty soon, happy hour would be on a Thursday, so I'd be going to the bars Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then I was going every single night of the week to the bars. I'd get babysitters for my 2 children, and the next day when I would be sober, my children would tell me upsetting things that happened with those babysitters, and I'd say, that didn't happen. That was your imagination. You see, I didn't want anything to interfere with my party time. You know, when I came to you all, I said, I haven't hurt no one but me. And to share the truth with you tonight, I truly was like the tornado that the book talks about. I roared through people's lives. If I came into contact with you, directly or indirectly, I probably owe you amends. I'm always amazed when people talk about making amends to self. My book tells me I was a tornado. And the amends I make to me is today I stay sober. Today I can brush my teeth and not choke on the toothpaste. Today I can take a bath. I always love it when new people come in and you can smell them before you see them. See, when I was new, I didn't see any sense in taking a bath, so I'd grab the perfume and just squirt 5 or 6 squirts, you know. When my sponsor said, Bonnie, start taking a bath, I thought, why? You know, it was amazing to me. And the amends I make to me today are just basics because I've roared through people's lives. One night I went to a bar in a suburb of Columbus, and My niece and her husband were watching my two kids that night, and I probably left the bar at closing. When the bartender would say, last call, I would say, give me two. And I'd arrange things in my purse so I could put two drinks in my purse and not spill them for the ride home. I left that bar at closing, and I went home and I got into bed in my kid's bedroom. And I woke up and people were screaming. My son Michael had played with a lighter and caught my house on fire. My daughter Mary Melissa, she was in the flames. My niece, her husband, went into the flames and rescued my baby daughter. Then he rescued my son and I. See, I was still drunk. I couldn't have saved myself, let alone my two kids. If my niece and her husband wouldn't have been there that night, my children would have died. Do you know that never entered my mind? The only thing that entered my mind was the inconvenience my house being on fire cost me. A couple of days after my place had caught on fire, I'm staying at my girlfriend Barbara's house while the insurance company's evaluating the loss of my home. And we're sitting at her kitchen table, and I said, hey, Barb, I feel like I got a hair on my tongue. Look and see. She looked. She said, Bonnie, your tongue is black. I said, my tongue is black? Let me see a mirror. Well, I looked. My tongue was black. Barbara called her family doctor. He said, that's the beginning of alcoholic poisoning. Barbara and I discussed it. We decided I needed to brush my tongue 6-8 times a day. I know that sounds crazy. See, the beginning of alcoholic poisoning, that would have been your problem. My problem was lack of brushing my tongue. I didn't get to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous for 11 years after black tongue set in. I was rotten from the inside out. As a result of this motorcycle accident, I got a large amount of money. At this time on TV, they had a show called Starsky and Hutch. It was about two policemen that drove a red and white Gran Torino. Guess what I bought with that money? Red and white Gran Torino, just like them two policemen had. I'd drive down the road in that Torino, have a jug of wine between my legs, bag of dope on the seat, pull up by the police and wave. Thought I was real cool. In the county jail, I was not cool. I was crying so loud in the county, the other inmates were screaming for me to shut up. But you know, when I got out of the county, I told my friends a big war story about how bad I was in the county. I didn't know I was full of fear. I didn't know I was full of fear when I came to you all. I would go to meetings and the topic would be anger. And I would think, anger, that's it. I've been angry all my life. One of my favorite songs growing up was He's a Rebel. I rebelled at anyone with any type of authority over me. Today, through working the 12 steps, I know I lived my whole life in self-centered fear, but I didn't know it back then. I had that red and white Gran Torino 1,500 miles, and I was driving home from this party on campus one night where I had my first experience with ouzo. Now, it didn't seem to me like I'd been drinking that ouzo that long that I ought to be able to drive. Of course, I never considered the Quaaludes I was taking with the ouzo. What I need to share with you now is when I drank alcohol, I thought I had psychic power. Especially with you men. I know none of you ladies gonna be able to relate to this, but I used to think I could think, look at me, and you men would look, and I'd bat my eyes at you. I tried that when I came into these rooms, and I got a sponsor told me, hang with you ladies. You ladies would tell me, don't give me that BS. Well, I was driving home from this party where I'd been drinking this ouzo, and a van was coming at me, and I was thinking, move. He didn't move. I didn't move. I probably had a death grip or no grip on my steering wheel. I used to hold my wheel so tight, I've had cramps in my fingers the next day. Well, this van didn't move. I didn't move. I totaled his new van, my new car, came to at the hospital. They're sewing my kneecap up. I said to the nurse, give me something for the pain. She said, honey, you're sedated enough. Boy, she's got bad attitude. Thought I better leave town. Cops are going to come and get me and charge me with OMVI. So I called the airport and made reservations to go to Florida. Took my son and daughter to Florida with me. We were there for 10 days. What I remember out of 10 days in Florida, we got to the motel. I said, Michael and Mary, take these ice buckets down and fill up the big ice bucket, the bathtub. They filled the bathtub with ice, and I filled it with booze. And that's what I remember out of my trip to Florida. But I got pictures. Thank God for Polaroid cameras. Half of my life is on film. I didn't record it. I've got pictures of Disneyland or Disney World, whichever one's in Florida, the Wax Museum and SeaWorld. It amazes me looking through scrapbooks today and thinking, oh, yeah, I was there. All right, I see me there. Don't remember, but I was there. I'd been working at a little restaurant before I went to Florida, and when I came back, I decided I didn't want to work anymore. I don't know if any of y'all can relate to that, but I always felt like somebody was supposed to take care of me. My parents took care of me. My husband took care of me. When I came to you and you told me get a job, I was like, whoa, a job? I can't believe I'm supposed to take care of me. Well, when I came back from Florida, I called my employer and I quit my job. And I went down and I got on welfare. Now I'm living on welfare, and I started making my money illegally. In the beginning, I would have a code. I would say, I will never sell this. But then a semi-truck would come in with this. And I would say, well, I might as well take their money. Somebody else is going to take their money. But I'll never sell that. But then someone would come in with a big haul of that. And I would say, well, I might as well take their money. Somebody else is going to take their money. And I was adjusting life to suit Bonnie's terms. And you told me, give up fighting and live life on life's terms. But back then, I adjusted life to suit my terms. And I rationalized it to make me completely in the right and everyone else in the wrong. My house is just like a zoo. My kids are getting up and gone from their bedroom to the kitchen to get a glass of milk, and there's people passed out. I'm leaving town for a weekend because my house is being watched. I'm afraid to use my telephone because my phone is tapped. It's an insane way to bring up two children. But you know, had you said to me at that very time, are you a good mom? I would have said yes. And I would have believed it down in my heart. I'd have taken you into Michael and Mary's bedrooms. I'd have showed you their TV, their stereo, their toys, their clothes. I thought things made me a good mother. I thought buying things was how I showed love. You told me I had it all mixed up. You told me to take the discipline, the structure that I learned in coming to meetings, praying, reading my book, and calling my sponsor a day at a time, and take it home with me. And if I tell my kids, I'll pick you up at 2 o'clock on Saturday to be dependable today. Back then, I had it all mixed up. When I was 16, I had an idea in my head of a perfect mate for me. It was someone good-looking, good education, little money in the bank. By this time, my idea of a perfect mate is someone who likes to party just like I do. I met my perfect mate, Jay. Trouble is, Jay liked to throw up and lay in it just like I did. And he liked to urinate to bed just like I did. And those are things you don't tell each other when you first meet. You kind of slide into them, you know. Jay and I had our first date. We went to Lawson's, got a bottle of Boone's Farm, sat in the parking lot, drank that Boone's Farm, and snorted cocaine. I thought, this is my kind of man. I'm in love. Well, we started dating. Then we started living together. I'm coming to over here in my family room, and Jay's over there. There's throw up in the middle. I'm saying he did it. He's saying I did it. I'm coming to, and there's urine in my bed. I'm saying Jay did it. He's saying I did it. I'm hiding my bottles from him. I'm getting up the next day, and I can't remember where I hid them. Thought I need to take notes. I'd write down where I hid my bottles, get up the next day, get my notepad out, couldn't read my writing. It's like playing treasure hunt, throwing stuff out of cabinets, out of drawers. It was insane. My son Michael was 12 years old at this time, and he came to me and said, Mom, I can't live in this house anymore. He said, it's a zoo. I'm going to grandmother's to live. And I said, good, when you're gone, maybe everything be okay. And now I'm blaming Michael. I blamed everyone and everything but me and the actions I took. I was always a victim in my head. When I came to you and you said, Vicky, victim is dead. Pick up the tools of recovery and live life on life's terms. I was amazed. I had been a victim for so many years. Well, now my son Michael went to his grandparents to live, and my daughter, she became the mom. She did the cooking, the cleaning, the laundry, anything that got done around the house, Mary Melissa did. When I drank alcohol, I was a different person than I am today. Today, through the grace of my God, through the guidance of people in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and through the steps found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my God, I am not the person I was, nor am I the person I was when I drank. But when I drank, I had a philosophy I learned out on the street. It was, if you were a man, I wanted your money. If you was a woman, I wanted your man. I'm not going to stand at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and act like I got here because I was dishing up soup at some mission. I wasn't giving no food to the needy. I did a lot of bad things. Well, Jay got a letter from his parents. He had a very large inheritance. I just shared with you, if you was a man, I wanted your money, and I wanted Jay's money. I decided we would get married. Well, I've got pictures because I don't remember the wedding. And Jay and I got married, and we were married as best I can remember today a couple weeks. And Jay got a letter from his parents. They had invested his entire inheritance. He didn't get one dime. And thank God he didn't. Had we had any money more, I might not have made it to you all. Jay and I were married maybe 4 months as best I can remember today, and I came downstairs into the kitchen one morning, and Jay's laying on the kitchen floor, and he had blood coming from his nose and blood coming from his mouth. He had alcohol, drugs, and paraphernalia laying on the floor beside him. When you play on the side of the street that I played on, you learn the law. Take care of number one. My attitude was, I'm not going to jail for him. I cleaned up the mess. And then I called the ambulance. They came and took Jay to the hospital. And he was at the hospital for a short while. When he came home from the hospital, I said, look, Jay, you can't live in this house anymore. You're a bad example for my daughter. You have to go. And so Jay left. And now there's Mary Melissa and I living in the house. And I'm coming too, and there's urine in my bed. I couldn't hardly believe I had done that. I knew I must have, but I couldn't hardly believe I had done that. My daughter's finding me face down on the floor in throw up. She's picking me up and cleaning me off and putting me in the bed. I start getting these letters from Jay, and in the letters he would say, Bonnie, I don't drink or do drugs anymore. I'm in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I dropped the letters on the floor, and I thought, my God, they're brainwashing that boy. I don't know about your brain. I do know about mine. And it could have used a real thorough washing when I came to you all. Jay and I no longer had anything in common. I went down and divorced Jay. I went down and got on a program in Columbus. It started by the federal government in about the 1950s, and it's called the methadone program. It's given to people that have done IV injections of opiated drugs. I settled for the life of being a registered junkie with the federal government. It was the only way I knew to live, the only way. If I was an alcoholic and anything else when I came to you all, I was an alcoholic and an animal. And what I'm going to share with you is the life of an animal. My day would begin at 10 o'clock. I would go to the methadone clinic and drink my methadone in front of the nurse. And I would leave the clinic and go home and put on a quilted flowered robe. And I'd sit on a love seat in my living room. I'd drink wine on that love seat and smoke dope and take pills. I'd urinate on that love seat, and I'd crawl like a snake into the kitchen for injections. See, I truly was an animal before coming to you all. And had it not been for a sponsor that didn't worry about hurting my feelings, I would have exposed my animal to you all. But my sponsor told me, sit down, shut up, clean up. She told me clear-cut direction. She didn't worry about hurting my feelings. She knew this meant my life. She knew that I had another drunk in me, but maybe not another recovery. I went to the methadone clinic one day, and I had an automobile accident. The police came, and I was charged with OMVI, leaving the curb without safety, and 2 counts of possession of drugs. I came to in the county jail that morning, and I had no idea why I was there. I got to thinking, did I go to the methadone clinic? See, it wasn't uncommon for me to carry a gun. If you got on my tail, I got out, ran back, put my gun in your face, and told you to get off my AWS. And from the county jail, I thought, did I go to the clinic this morning, and did I shoot someone while I was driving? And I couldn't remember, boy, that fear of coming to in jail and thinking, what did I do to end up here and not knowing? And I got to thinking about a phone call I got from my mother. And my mom had asked me to please get rid of my guns. And my attitude was, why? My guns aren't hurting you. She said, Bonnie, yesterday you had a gun to your head. Mary Melissa took the gun from you. You took the gun from Mary and you put it to Mary's head. You said, Mary, if you move, I'll kill you. I said, no, Mom, I wouldn't do that. I love my daughter. And I looked, and my guns were loaded. And I knew if they were loaded, I planned on using them. And from the county jail, I thought, my God, did I kill my baby daughter? And I had no idea. They could have came back and said, you murdered 10 people, and I would have had to have believed them. A man came back and told me what my charges were, and my parents had arranged for an attorney and for my bail. I got out of the county and went home, and 6 days went by, and the Columbus police had time to analyze the drugs I'd been picked up with. And they came out and charged me with a felony. They put me in handcuffs, and as they're taking me down my front stairs, putting me in the paddy wagon, I looked up in my stairway, and there's my mother and my baby daughter crying hysterically. Excuse me. As the police take my mother's daughter and my daughter's mother off to jail. What a sight. Had you said to me at that very time, whose fault are those tears? I would have said those cops. It wouldn't have entered my mind that I broke the law. I would have said those cops, they pick on me, and I would have believed it. They took me back down to the county, and my attorney came down to see me. He said, Bonnie, you've got 3 misdemeanors and 1 felony. You're looking at 3 to 5 years in Marysville on the felony. If you go into a treatment center for alcoholism, we can enter the plea, treatment in lieu of conviction. And I went into a treatment center for that very reason. I was in that treatment center for 20 days. When I was a kid growing up, my mom had little sayings like we have. We have one day at a time. Easy does it. One of Mom's favorite sayings was, the truth will set you free. As I got to be a little bit bigger, I thought, truth will put me in jail. There with you, the truth will set you free. In that treatment center, they told me alcoholism is a disease, just like cancer. Our book calls it a fatal malady, a progressive illness. It says we're like men who have lost their legs, will never grow new ones. In other words, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And I heard that. They told me to come to you all, and I stood a chance of staying sober a day at a time. I got out of treatment, and I started attending meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a job when I was about 25 days sober, and I was night manager at a restaurant. I would go to daytime meetings and then go to work at night. I was going to this daytime meeting every day, and on my days off, I would go to 3 meetings. I felt safe in here with you all. Johnny H. from California talks about the power that's in the room when we're here. And in our book, in the chapter, A Vision for You, it talks about the electric atmosphere of the room. Johnny says, if you don't believe there's a power here when we're here, come to this room when it's empty. And the power's not here. But when we come in here, the power's here. And I felt safe in here with you all. I was going to meetings every day and going to work at night. And I had 9 weeks of sobriety. I was in my office one night counting money. And a busboy that worked for me came in and put cocaine down in front of me. I took a bill out of the money I was counting, rolled it up, and snorted the cocaine. I went out that night, drank Heineken beer, and smoked marijuana. And I didn't tell nobody. I carried that guilt around for a couple weeks. I didn't dare make eye contact with you during that time. I knew if you seen my eyes, you would know what I'd done, so I would look down all the time. I carried that guilt around for 2 weeks, and my God's grace gave me the ability to be honest with the group, and I told them what I had done. A man came up to me after the meeting, and he said, Bonnie, have you been praying? My attitude was, you mean I got to do that too? I came here. And you see, I had that kind of attitude because I knew in my head and I knew in my heart that a God of my mother's understanding had written me off a long time ago. And the gift that you give me and that you must give me because of our 12 tradition is a God of my understanding, not a God of your religion, but a God of my understanding. You know, I didn't even know how to pray. And I had been a Bible school teacher at one time. I had taught young adults a Bible class at one time. And I had no idea how the Our Father went to when I came to you all. You know, we have little cards in Columbus with the Serenity Prayer on it. I stole the card with the Serenity Prayer on it, took it home and memorized it, so I could feel like a part of the group when you said the prayer and I would know it. Later I found out you give those cards away for free. But I was a thief, you know. And I didn't know how to pray. And this man told me a very simple prayer. He said, Bonnie, you just get on your knees and ask God to keep you sober today. And before you go to sleep, get on your knees and thank God. And that started a line of communication between me and my God. I got a sponsor, and my sponsor had me call her every day. She told me to call her every day, so when my thinking got crazy, I wouldn't let my head tell me, I don't want to call her and bug her. I automatically knew her phone number. My sponsor and I would go to meetings together 2 or 3 times a week. My first year of sobriety, I went to court 11 times on my 4 charges. I was given fines, probation, and counseling. As of April 1986, I was released from probation. When I was 9 months sober, I was given a subpoena to testify on a breaking and entering I had committed, and someone else got arrested for it. Well, I called my sponsor. I said, look, I'm selling a ranch and going to California. I'm not going to jail sober. And she reminded me that I must be willing to clean up my past. And I went to court that morning, and I'm sitting in that courtroom reciting this serenity prayer just over and over in my head, knowing if I have to testify, I'm going to incriminate myself. The prosecutor comes over, taps me on the shoulder. He said, you can go. I said, I can go. He said, your appearance here today was enough. We don't need your testimony. Well, I ran out of that courtroom, getting my car and driving up the freeway, going home. I thought, I forgot my $6 witness fee. I didn't go back. They could keep it. It was fine with me. You know, one of the ways my sponsor told me I needed to make amends to my family was through action. Of course, I sat down with my family members, like the book says, and I analyzed my part, and I owned up to the things I had done. And then I had to continue to take action to do step 9. And my sponsor would tell me, I want you to call your mother and father and your kids every day. And I want you to just say hello and let them talk for a few minutes, and you be a listener. They listen to you talk for years and years. And I would call my mother every day, and my mother was a great coupon user. She loved coupons. Some days she would just drive me crazy talking about the coupons she had used at the different grocery stores. And I would say, God, keep my mouth shut, and I would just be a listener. And then I would tell her I love her and would hang up. And my mom and I got to be great friends over the years. And I would go up, and my mom and I would go out to lunch, and I would take her to the doctor once a month and have her blood pressure checked and different things. And in March of 1991, Mom was diagnosed with lung cancer. And my mom wasn't a smoker. And she was part Blackfoot Indian, and she had a great fear of hospital. And during the next 90 days before Mom died in June, I hired someone to do my work. And I would go and be there with Mom from 7 in the morning or 7:30 until evening. About a quarter till 7 every day, Mom would say, Bonnie, you better go to the meeting, tell all the babies hello. That's what she called the girls I sponsored. She didn't know a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, but she loved you if you said you were in AA. She loved you because you had taken an animal and turned her into a daughter. My mom was real angry at God because she had lung cancer. And the night I arranged for the funeral home to pick up Mom's body, I went home, and it was about 2, 3, 4 in the morning, and I was just completely drained. And I said, God, let me read what I need to read from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Did Mom make peace with God? Yeah. And I opened our book to the page that says, they had visioned the great reality, their loving and all-powerful Creator. And I knew my mother had made peace with God. I was able to be a daughter for my dad. My dad had no idea how to even write a personal check. I would go up in the mornings before I went to work and take care of my dad's grocery shopping and house cleaning and different things. And in November of 91, my dad and I were at the hospital. And we were there with my baby daughter, Mary Melissa. And I was Mary Melissa's Lamaze coach. And my grandson, Michael William, was born on Thanksgiving Day. And when Michael William was about 10 minutes old, I thought, this is like a high I've never been on. I think I'm going to pass out. And I thought to myself, boy, this ain't bad. From Stone's Grill, Methadone Clinic, Lamaze coach, to a baby daughter I almost killed many times over. And this little grandson here. And my dad was overjoyed that he got to see his great-grandson. And in October of 92, I walked from the living room into the family room at my parents' house. And my dad was dead. And I know my dad today is with my mother. And they're walking past the big meeting. And they're saying, thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. You took an animal and turned her into a daughter. How do I thank you for that? There are no words at all to describe my gratitude. You know, my parents' house, I had it remodeled after they died, and I've since moved in. But during the time I was having it remodeled, I was having to go through my mother's clothes, and I went up there one day, and I was babysitting my grandson, Michael William. And I would take one of my mother's blouses out of the closet, and I would take the plastic hanger off of the blouse, and I would pass it to Michael William. And then I would get another blouse and do the same thing and fold the blouse and put it in the box to take to the Goodwill. And just about the fourth or the fifth blouse, just as I would feel myself just hardly able to stand the pain, I would look up at my baby grandson, and he would have this plastic hanger going, like it's an airplane. Surely God doesn't take anything good away that he doesn't replace it. Yeah. What gifts you've given me. It's unbelievable to me. When I was new in sobriety and you would say, what do you want? What do you want for staying sober? What gifts do you want? I would have said, I don't want to go to jail. I wouldn't have said, I want freedom from bondage or self. I wouldn't have said, I want to care about you so you can care about me. It's only by forgiving you that I can forgive me. At least it's been so with me. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me, cling to the thought in God's hand. The dark past is your greatest possession. And the greatest possession I have today, you've allowed me to share with you. What a joy that is. What an adventure this is. You know, in our book, it talks about as we trudge the road of happy destiny. It's nowhere we're going to. It's right here, right now. This is the day that we're trudging the road of happy destiny. It's been such a privilege to come down here and be with y'all this weekend. I just don't know how to tell you how grateful I am. My baby girl, Carol, you're taking real good care of her, and she's a real good AA baby, and she's just been a real bonus in my life. And all of you that I've got to meet this weekend, you've been real bonuses in my life. I'd like to thank you all for having me out here, and I'd like to thank this group for being around for 55 years, having that door open for that drunk that comes in. Thank you all very much for having me here this weekend. Thank you.